welcome to episode 1 of Listening Liberally. I'm Chris Partridge, Living Liberally intern, and your liaison to all things living liberally in the New York City area. In this, our maiden podcasting voyage, we'll hear clips from Laughing Liberally's joint comedy showcase and author talk on drug policy in America, plus insights from New York's rising political progressives on challenging incumbent complacency. All that and more coming right up. Once again, welcome to episode 1 of Listening Liberally, your audio guidebook for living liberally in NYC. For the uninitiated, Living Liberally is a New York-based progressive organization that organizes social events around liberal politics. We arrange Drinking Liberally social clubs at bars and restaurants, Laughing Liberally political comedy shows, Eating Liberally for progressive foodies, Reading Liberally book groups, and Screening Liberally showings of socially conscious films. If there's something you're into, more than likely, there's a Living Liberally group for you. Living Liberally is about creating communities around progressive politics, doing the things you love, engaging with socially conscious people. For more info about Living Liberally, chapters near you, upcoming events, and incisive liberal commentary, check us out on the web at livingliberally.org.
We got a lot of issues with substances in the world. I grew up in Atlanta. You can't even buy a beer on Sunday in Atlanta. Can't buy a beer on a Sunday. You can buy crack on Sunday. Imagine going to a crack. Oh, no, I can't sell you crack. It's Sunday. You can buy guns on Sunday in Atlanta. Guess I'm home on a Sunday. I should buy a gun, smoke some crack. Go to the grocery store and make them sell me some beer.
I think it's easier, truth be told, I think it's easier to quit doing drugs than it is to stay on a good diet. Because when you quit doing drugs, how many drugs are there? You should have to stay away from all the drugs. How many are there really? There's like 5 real drugs that you have to stay away from. But Wendy's comes out with a new sandwich every month. That is not something that drug addicts have to deal with. Drug addicts aren't watching TV and seeing commercials for new cocaine, now with barbecue sauce. Shit, that does sound good. Grab a piece, honey. Forget it. We'll go on the way to the gym. It'll be fine.
All right, welcome back. Those were Laughing Liberally comedians Kostaki Economopoulos and Harry Turjanian performing at last week's Laughing Liberally joint book talk and comedy showcase. The event also featured an exclusive reading by author Ryan Grimm from his new book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, which traces the secret history of getting high in America. Listen now as Ryan reads exclusive excerpts from his book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, and answers the question on all of our minds, what happened to all the acid?
About 8 years ago, I realized that I could not find any LSD. So I started asking some friends of mine who went to a lot of fish shows or other festivals or, you know, whatever other kind of hippie happening they were going to, say, you know, when you go there, ask around for acid. They did. I'd go to some parking lots here and there, I'd ask around. And invariably for years, 2001, 2002, 2003, nobody was finding LSD. Even at a Burning Man 2004 rainbow gatherings, no acid. There, you'd find some people who were selling acid, and it would look like acid. It's the easiest drug in the world to fake. If anybody has $5, it's a little something. And an hour later, the guy, you know, you're never going to see the guy again, and you're $5 lighter, but you still are proving your point that there is no LSD out there. So, at some point, I was taking a journalism class and was asked to write an article about a trend, and I thought to myself, I can't find any acid. So what happened? My theory comes down to 3 things, and because it involves acid, they're all funny. In kind of a tragic kind of way. One of them is I found an FBI field report from the 80s, which showed that they had discovered that when the Grateful Dead came through a town, the availability of psychedelics increased in that area for the next several months. So this is kind of a roving psychedelic postal service that never stopped touring for 30-some years. So it comes into town, than all the rave kids and everybody else who wants whatever the Grateful Dead lot is selling, which is everything. They show up there. They go to the smorgasbord, and then they sell themselves at these, through the 90s, if you guys recall, there were these giant raves, you have thousands of kids showing up in one place and tripping all night. So you had this distribution network going through the country that would interact with these ravers. So it wasn't, acid is never the kind of thing where you're going to go drive into the ghetto and be like, yo, you holding any acid? You're more like, it's just not going to happen. So the other problem is acid is extremely hard to make. And from what I learned in my research, a lot of the recipes that are online, even recipes that the FBI presents in court, etc., aren't complete. And without an expert knowledge of the process and being an expert chemist, you can't make it. At the same time, it's not very profitable. If you want to sell a product, you want it to be addictive, you want it to be something that people are going to do over and over again. You want it to be, or at least something that people will do again after they've just done it. Think ecstasy. You roll for 4 or 5 hours. When you're coming down, it's quite a reasonable thought. Say, hey, why don't I take another one of those? Very few people, after 12 hours of blowing their mind on LSD, say, I got an idea. Let's do that again. You probably don't want to do that again for months, maybe even years, maybe the rest of your life. That is not the type of product that American capitalism is going to generate a lot of capital toward. So if you're going to make LSD, you have to be sort of evangelical about it, and that's always how the production of acid has been. Very centralized and evangelical. People doing it because they want to spread this consciousness expansion around the country.
You were listening to Ryan Grimm talk about his new book, This Is Your Country on Drugs. In addition to being a spectacular author and all-around fascinating guy, Ryan Grimm is also a columnist over at HuffingtonPost.com. So to check out some of Ryan's past work, including excerpts from his new book, This Is Your Country on Drugs, check him out at Huffington Post. All right, we're going to take a little break here. When we come back, upcoming events in the New York City Living Liberally community. And we'll also hear from New York's rising progressive stars on how you can get involved in the progressive movement and what it's like to crash the political gate.
Welcome, this is a farmhouse. We have cluster flies, alas. And this time of year is bad.
All right, welcome back. Continuing with our psychedelic theme for today's show, that was Fish with Farmhouse. We turn now to ways that you can get involved with the Living Liberally community in the New York City area. August 5th, Living Liberally will host Cheap Urban Sustainable, a fun and informative open house about living sustainably in New York City without breaking the bank. The event, which will be held 6 to 9 p.m. at The Tank in Midtown, will feature local businesses, community activists, demonstrations, films, and live entertainment. Cheap Urban Sustainable is an opportunity to learn how to adopt a sustainable lifestyle, a healthier, more eco-friendly way of life. Living Liberally will dispel the myth that green living in NYC is only possible for the well-to-do by helping guests learn how to find and use local resources that facilitate environmentally conscious urban living. Again, that's August 5th at The Tank, 6 to 9 p.m. For more information about Cheap Urban Sustainable, visit us online at livingliberally.org/cheap-urban-sustainable. For anyone interested in changing the world one pint at a time, check out one of our many Drinking Liberally chapters across the city. The original Drinking Liberally meets each Thursday at 7:30 p.m. at Rudy's Bar and Grill in Midtown. That's 9th Avenue between 44th and 45th at Rudy's. Anyone in Queens interested in drinking liberally, check out Donald and the Queens chapter the second Friday of every month at the Bohemian Hall and Beer Garden at 24th Avenue at 7:30 p.m. in Queens, obviously. The third Tuesday of every month, Drinking Liberally Steps Out meets at 7 p.m. at the XES Lounge, West 24th Street between 6th and 7th Ave. So the next meeting of Drinking Liberally Steps Out will be July 21st. The Upper East Side Drinking Liberally meets at Doc Watson's the last Tuesday of every month, 6:30 p.m. Doc Watson's is at 2nd Ave at 77th Street, and the next meeting of the Upper East Side will be July 28th. The West Bronx chapter of Drinking Liberally meets first and third Friday of every month at 7:30 p.m., making their next chapter meeting the 17th of July, and they meet at, I will butcher this name, so apologies to the West Bronx, they meet at An Biao Bacht, which is at West 238th Street between Waldo and Greystone. If any listeners out there are from the West Bronx and have pronunciation guide for that, absolutely email in to us at livingliberally@gmail.com. Greenwich Village Drinking Liberally meets the first Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m., and they meet at the Poisson Rouge on Bleecker Street between Thompson and Sullivan. The newest addition to the New York City Drinking Liberally community, the Washington Heights chapter, meets at Coogan's on Broadway the last Sunday of each month, 6:30 p.m. That's Coogan's at Broadway at 168th Street, and the next chapter meeting for the Washington Heights will be July 26th. For any information on those chapters and more, check us out on the web at livingliberally.org.
Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Paul Newell. I was a candidate last year for New York State Assembly in the Lower East Side, Lower Manhattan. I ran against Sheldon. I am a progressive Democrat and a proud card-carrying liberal.
Following Ryan Grimm's reading last Wednesday, the tank was packed to the gills full of liberal agitators for a special screening of Justin Sullivan's new documentary, Excuse Me, Mr. Speaker. The intimate film follows Paul Newell's 2008 campaign for state assembly against 32-year incumbent and assembly speaker Sheldon Silver. Sullivan brings to the screen a palpable, often endearing portrait of a man, of a campaign resisting seemingly indomitable momentum of incumbency. The film is a tireless, close piece of cinema, but also offers a window into the state of the current progressive movement, one which is bound to leave audiences, as the one Wednesday, inspired to organize, act, and work for real change. The screening was followed by a panel discussion stacked with some of New York's most impassioned rising progressives, Paul Newell, filmmaker Justin Sullivan, and Paul's fiery campaign manager Evan Hutchinson, fielded questions about the film and the Newell campaign's historic blasphemies. City Council candidates Yetta Kurland and Pete Gleason were also on hand to provide insights about challenging the daunting inertia of incumbency. In the next segment, we hear the panel's discussion on insurgent candidacy and what that means for the modern progressive movement. Stay tuned.
Just being out there. And I think that what is so special, one of the things that's so special about this movie is it gives this very human, humane, intimate, up-close look at the war to protect democracy and really this fight for this ideal of this democratic process. And it's really beautiful to see and you know, all the actors of kind of the power of the people. And I think that this city and this state is in a severe crisis in terms of public interest and that democratic process, and to watch Paul go through that process and, you know, and the story, and as like you see the story of the people, there's kind of that sad music, and as you see, like, you know, Paul with his positive attitude, and you know, Paul, as he said in his farewell speech or in his final speech, you know, he may have actually lost that race, but he influenced forever and changed the course of history in downtown politics and in politics throughout New York City and New York State. And I think we have to all remember, those of us working for progressive change, that everything we do has an impact. And all of us in this room, and the work that you did in your campaign, the work that Peter and I are endeavoring to do in our communities and our districts, means everything in the world to the process, and it's as much that process as the end result. And I'm just honored to sit up here with you and to have watched that momentum.
Successful or not, the Obama administration is. What it has done for the American people is it has inspired, it has given us hope, and that hope we need to take to the next level. The problem with our societies today, it is set up to keep us entirely too busy. When people are working 15, 16 hours a day, they don't have time to take part in the democratic process. I not only commend Paul for running, I not only commend the filmmaker and Yetta for running, and the campaign manager. I commend all of you for being here tonight, and I want to thank you.
The hardest thing for progressives trying to get involved in campaigns, either as a candidate or involved, is getting the idea that you can change things, realizing that things can happen if you get this message out there. It is a lot of work, and it does take a lot of personal sacrifice, both from the candidate and people who are involved in the campaign, but the rewards are incredible. The ability, both in terms of seeing real change in your community and seeing reaction to your message, but also in terms of an opportunity to get out there and meet thousands and thousands of people and hear their concerns and really learn about your community. There's nothing better. When you get people engaged, even if they don't make the donation, even if they don't agree to vote for you, even if they don't agree to volunteer, whatever it is that you're asking people for, you've got a personal connection. You've learned something about them and about your community and about how things work. And I encourage people to give it a shot.
Being campaign manager on a local level is one of the most wonderful fucking things you can do. The energy of the volunteers, getting to know folks on the ground, the intimacy of it, a district you can walk in an hour, it's amazing. And Lower Manhattan's a wonderful place to live.
All right, you just heard from City Council candidates Pete Gleason and Yetta Kurland, in addition to Paul Newell and his campaign manager, Evan Hutchison. Pete Gleason is running for City Council in New York's 1st District, and you can check him out on the web at pete2009.com. Yetta Kurland will be running for City Council in the 3rd District, and you can check out Yetta, contribute, or volunteer at yettakurland.com. That's yettakurland.com. Well, boys and girls, that's all we have for episode 1 of Listening Liberally. Thank you so, so much for tuning in. My name is Chris Partridge, Living Liberally intern. Don't forget to check out Living Liberally August 5th at the Tank, 6 to 9 p.m. for Cheap Urban Sustainable. It's going to be a really fantastic event with some great local businesses doing sustainable, fantastic work. Also, check out our blog at livingliberally.org for some incisive commentary on progressive media and all that good stuff. So check us out, livingliberally.org. See you next week. Here we go.